the topic okay. is basically living life extension, and there was also the topic of youth extension. Yeah. I think that's maybe something
kind of versus worth talking about. Like, I was kind of curious what that even meant, like the difference.
Well, because as we age more and more, you don't necessarily. It's quite possible that if you only extend life, you become more and more feeble as time goes on. You lose your physical abilities, you lose your mental abilities to Alzheimer's, to dementia, to all these things that we still don't
have. Yeah, but true life extension is basically extending your life in a way that's useful, not just like sitting there on a respirator or something, you know?
I mean,
I play tennis with guys in their 80s, for God's sakes, you know?
What has happened with life extension over the last few thousand years, we've added on life that definitely wouldn't be considered youth at this point. I mean, the 45 plus range has definitely extended.
Well, you know, youth. I mean, what is youth? I mean, in a sense, you know, youth is wasted on the young, but, you know, what does it really mean? I mean, you know, nobody's going to define me as a youth, but in my brain, I don't really feel any different than I did 35 years ago. So what the hell does it mean?
Okay. Bringing it some actual no hand waving. What about like that point when you reach your telemetric, your Hayflick limit?
Right.
That 23 to 24 year old point where you reach your Hayflick limit and the reproduction of your DNA starts the detrimental tiny minute mistakes
That's something we gotta solve.
But you can fix it. I mean, cancer cells get around that, the Hayflick limit. I mean, they can replicate as many times as they want, and that's part of the problem, actually.
Yeah.
Right. But I mean, as defining your youth, I mean, that right there, that is the defining point. When you reach your Hayflick limit,
I don't think that's true.
And every chemical reproduction, every cell reproduction is more degraded than the previous one.
What if I fix that and what is that going
to be?
To that. I think on a case-by-case basis, it's very different. One's mental and psychological state can drastically affect that. But as a general broad
There is the youth of the mind, but a brilliant mind trapped in a totally, completely useless body is a totally, completely useless mind.
Stephen Hawking.
It's not a totally. I mean, it's enough to get out there. It's enough
out there. You're saying
he's still writing papers,
right? Exactly.
Yeah, but you're saying you're trapped in a useless body.
I'm not saying it's useless though. It's enough
to get
out there.
Well, what's useless then? You know, I mean, he's sitting there like what? You know, pecking out letters. I mean, for God's sake.
I think this group is very prone to the separation of mind and body. Maybe not all of us at the table by camera skeptical eyebrows, but I know that I have a much healthier mind and disposition when my body is healthy. And so I think that that's a very simplistic way of putting it. It's not the biological explanation, but Stephen Hawking is able to, I assume being deaf when everything else, all your other senses are employed even more. When you're blind, all your other senses are employed even more. He's able to use his mind to that degree because he hasn't had much else to do.
Well, I just brought him up as an example of what do you mean by decrepit, you know?
Yeah.
How do you define that?
I think one example of a brilliant person is a law of false positives. I mean, you've got one example of a brilliant person, but in general, like, on a broader scale,
most young people with perfectly healthy bodies are completely useless, so what the fuck?
No, I think that's a stereotype that's sociologists.
Yeah,
that's sociologists can actually study things like that.
I'm not saying anything, you know, that improves with age, either.
Yeah, I mean, so what is your ideal age? I mean, if you could adjust your chemistry, and, you know, I think it's not, you know, now we have regenerative medicine, which can go and basically make disease tissue healthy again just by injecting stem cells, and you can basically reset the Hayflick limit that way, just by replacing the bad cells, and through genetic engineering and so on. So, you know, potentially I think you could redefine which age you wanted to live at. You know, your hormone levels, if you wanted to be you know, your 13-year-old testosterone-filled self, or estrogen, or you know.
Well, as she said, like the two are. I mean, the mind and the body aren't separate. I mean, you can't truly be an 80-year-old man and a 13-year-old testosterone body, because those hormones and chemicals that come with a 13-year-old testosterone body radically affect psychological states. I mean, you can't be the controlled... part of the reason that older people have more self-control is that they're not awash in a limbic tide of freaky hormones all the time. You know? And you can't escape that. You can't separate the two.
And so I think that the idea of youth extension is a term that's being used just for able-bodiedness as well as able-mind, which for a lot of people is, well, for everyone, it's very individual. For people who were healthier at 40 than they were at 20, for people who were only healthy when they were 12, or who have never been healthy or will always be healthy, and it's a very individualistic thing. So I think the idea is just being able. And not losing that, not necessarily improving upon it, we hope for that, but not necessarily degrading either, or at a very fast rate.
And I think there are also, you know, people take recreational drugs and, you know, lots of ways to, you know, think that they're coming back into youth, or there are, you know, even if you're maybe physically not well, you can take some drug to make you think you're in a better state than you are. But so that's some form of youth extension that, I don't know if it's necessarily sustainable if you're living long, but...
I have a different sense of youth. Youth is a maturation of infant. Infant has nothing much really crystallized in their own body skills or knowledge skills.
Yeah.
So it should you know, strengthen their body, grow, but also mind should absorb the environmental information and grow and the structure. That's structural using. It's a growing process. Then from there, with that capital of body and mind, that person is creating something, interacting or producing. That's a real youth state. So for Edison, he wanted to live 300 years because his youth was becoming more and more active until age 70 or 80. But unfortunately, although his knowledge becomes so bigger and structured, body become weak. So at the time, if somehow the body can be maintained, then he can be a super inventor up to 300 years. That's a useful state.
Yeah, and going along with that, if you, so much of that, allowing your body to degrade while you focus on your mind, is because you don't have time to balance those out. If I knew that I had more time to learn all the things I want to learn, then I would feel better about spending the time I do on a treadmill. Or I would quit reading while I was running and then falling. You know, because we have to choose what we spend our time on, something always loses. And so if Edison allowed his... Is it Edison?
Thomas Edison.
I just want to make sure. If he's focusing so much on his mind that he allows his body to degrade, if we have help both in extending your mind as well as your body, are you going to spend as much time as you need to? Are we going to make responsible decisions if we have the option?
Never enough time. Well, you know,
that was the point I was thinking about, was what's the economical factors of the fact that, you know, 50% of the population, throwing out a number, random number, has all the time in the world now. I mean, are they going to go to their humdrum jobs and punch in 9 to 5 every day for, you know, 150, 300, 1,000 years? I mean, or you're going to say, screw that, I'm going on vacation now for the next couple hundred years. I mean, do you contribute, or are you still going to, how is that going to work out?
Probably the same way it does now. I mean, you get those people who, they want to do it, you know, they want to work. I mean, my parents moved to Europe my mother didn't have to work anymore because of some weird thing that my father did. And after about 2 years, you know, she decided that she would rather come back to the United States and work than stay in Europe and just, I mean, travel to different countries every single week. I'm getting a postcard every single week. She would rather come back here and work just because it's what she loves to do. You know, she's a microbiologist, and she wants to be there in the lab. And that concept of a permanent vacation, you know, some people want to be on a permanent vacation, and a lot of those people are trying to do that right now. And some people, they want to be in the lab. And those people, they're going to try to do that regardless, you know. Given another 100 years, you know, I don't think we're going to slow down. Nobody's going to stop scrambling to do what they want to do. We're just going to have more time to do it.
I think it's safe to say you'll have more choice, basically. Just,
I think your mother is in the situation in which she's not alienated from her labor. She actually really likes her labor. I think that the way that even things like student loans are set up currently, if you give me a few 100 years, I might have them paid off, but maybe not. I think the economic and social political systems will continue to evolve to where most people aren't at that state of unalienated labor. Maybe that's pessimistic of me, but those type of things that force people to strive to continue to exist, even if it's infinite existence, I think will be around.
Well, I think a lot of that has to do with our short, frantic lives. I mean, you know, we have these short, frantic systems that try to get the most out of what we've got because we've got so little. You know, when you have somebody who's like, wow, you know, I do have the time. I mean, social systems could be completely, like, new social systems could be completely emergent just from the fact that we have time. I mean, that's the resource that, you know.
I think that is a very false assumption, in that one of the reasons we invent tools is to save time. We have a blender so you don't have to beat it by hand. We have, you know, microwave so you don't have to wait for 2 hours for your turkey to cook. I mean, what do you eat? But you can still eat it. You know, we're always coming up with ways of saving time. And part of that is also extending our own lives. And yet, our lives never seem to get any less complicated or time-consuming. And so I don't think people are going to have this idea of vacation. We're still going to be nose to grindstone because we don't get a clean break. We don't get all of a sudden everybody has a clean life and we're going to revamp our social system and everything's going to be great. It's going to evolve along the systems that we already have. So unless we change the systems that we have.
Yeah, I think that's very true. I mean, the danger, of course, is that you're on the short end of the stick. Everyone's living forever, and you're the slave, and somebody else is the master forever. So, you know, that becomes biblical in some sense. But
it's kind of hard to believe in a sense. I mean, you know, not to go back to the singularity thing again, but, you know, somebody brought up nanotech. You know, AI coming on. I mean, you know, our problem in a few decades is going to be, what the hell do we do with ourselves? Because so much of everything's going to be, you know.
But we've already tripled our lifespans, and we still are doing shit.
I know. But as far as being, you know, kind of stuck in that kind of social system where, you know, you're enslaved to your student loans or something, I don't know.
A couple hundred years ago, you were slave to somebody else. Maybe not the student loans, it was the prince.
Right.
Maybe before that, it was the tribal lord. I mean, you're always a slave to something. I mean, that's never going to change.
That's I object.
Please do. Please
you
do.
Are just extrapolating linearly, but the reality is always non-linear. You know, at some point, it goes exponential, then it doesn't go into explosion. Something new thing happens, totally new thing. So we are looking at that time right now. There are many predictions, prophetic scientific prediction that around between 2010 to 2020, there might arrive something new.
Well, we already started talking about the singularity.
Yeah,
so, but that's not up to
date. I mean,
Yeah, it's not about singularity. It's there is no.